The sequence of lectures that I'm giving will be on an unsolved conjecture. This conjecture goes by the name of the fundamental lemma. From this part of the conjecture, we can tell that those that first formulated the conjecture thought that it would be fairly important for the theory of representation theory and automorphic forms. But from this part, we see that they rather underestimated the difficulty that people would find in proving this conjecture. In this first lecture, I'm going to give a lot of the background material in group theory to make it clear what this conjecture is. By the end, I'm certainly not going to solve the conjecture, but we're going to see precisely what the conjecture is and some of the main ideas that people are using currently to try to give a proof. So I want to start out today just the p-adic field and a reductive group. So FQ will be our finite field. This will be a residue field. F will be non-Archimedean local field. I want to treat both the case where F has characteristic zero, so some finite extension of QP. We'll also treat function field case where the field has positive characteristic. F will be the ring of integers. Sometimes I'll need an algebraic closure. And the groups that we take will just be connected, reductive, algebraic. And I'll let G be the Lie algebra. This problem, this conjecture, the fundamental lemma, is, as I said, it's unsolved, and people tend to look at this on a case-by-case basis. So let me mention a few of the cases that people are currently interested in. So I'll take a matrix J, n by n, first example, symmetric matrix, non-zero determinant, and then I can take the orthogonal group. All matrices such that the transpose of X times J times X is equal to J. Of course, determinant of X is not equal to zero. Determinant is equal to one. I can do exactly the same thing, replacing J with a skew symmetric matrix, K keeping the rest of the definition the same. The fact that the determinant is non-zero, in this case, forces N to be even. We get a symplectic group associated with that skew symmetric matrix defined by precisely the same condition. And then the third, again, I'll take J to be an n by n matrix, but in this case, I'll fix a quadratic separable extension and I'll let A is a matrix with coefficients in this quadratic extension. Then I'll write A bar for the matrix that I get by conjugating all of the entries of this matrix by the non-trivial automorphism associated with this extension. And then in this case, if I pick instead J to be a Hermitian matrix, I can define a unitary group progress towards the fundamental lemma goes. Of course, it'll help to know what the fundamental lemma is first, but the problem has been solved for the group SLN. Excellent progress has been made for the unitary groups, and then there's partial progress on other reductive groups. These other cases are still unknown. So let me give a series of assumptions restricting the types of groups we consider. First assumption is that G splits over an unramified extension. By that, I just mean if I take G and go up to the group over F1, this field extension, I want this to be a split group. That is having a Cartan subgroup that is split, and I want F1 over F to be unramified. Now, if we look at these examples, the first two examples are split groups already, and so by taking F1 equal to F, we see that they satisfy the condition. But in the third example, the group splits over the extension E, and if we ask that this assumption here be satisfied, then we find that the extension E is forced to be an unramified extension of the ground field F. So, one and two are split over F, and three splits over E, and so the assumption forces E over F to be an unramified extension. Okay, so that's our first assumption on the group. The second assumption that I want to make on the group G is that G is quasi-split I'll write down the forms that I have in mind right here. So let's So I'm going to look at matrices that have this particular form. So this can either be symmetric, skew symmetric, or Hermitian, according to the case. And then if I take the subgroup of matrices that are upper triangular, and I intersect with group G, I get this subgroup is a Borel subgroup defined over the ground field, and that's exactly what it means for a group to be quasi-split, is that we have a Borel subgroup defined over the base field. So in this case, in these cases, we get quasi-split reductive groups. Now I want to pick out a maximal compact subgroup of the group G of F. So let's let K be a maximal compact subgroup. So these exist, but in the case of a p-adic group, unlike the situation that you find over the reals, these subgroups are not all conjugate. And it's well understood what the structure of the different maximal compact subgroups are. And the third assumption that I want to make is that we're picking out a particular type of maximal compact subgroup. And so this will be stated as an assumption that K is hyperspecial. So let me explain a bit about what this means. The example to keep in mind is, for instance, the group GLN. And I can take all n by n matrices with non-zero determinant for the group, but I can also look at just those matrices whose entries are in the ring of integers. And in that case, I get a compact subgroup. And the idea of a hyperspecial subgroup is one that is generalizing this particular situation. So for this, we need to be able to speak of the integer points of the group G. So I'm going to assume there's, instead of just a reductive group over F, that we have a smooth group scheme over F, and this is the set of integer points of this group, and this G we want to be related to the original G just by going up to the field F should give us the group G, and finally, if I take the group over the residue field, I want this to be reductive. Okay, so those then are the conditions that I want. I'm defining this particular maximal compact subgroup. Let me give an example. We take J, so we've specialized it already. If we specialize it further, so it's still in the same form, but if we take these entries to be units, so elements of the group of units of the ring of integers, then we find that the equations defining the various reductive groups in the three examples can be defined by equations where the coefficients are in the ring of integers, OF, instead of just in the field, and then we can take the ring valued points of the group to get our maximal compact subgroup K. And the next thing I want to talk about, next topic, are endoscopic groups. So the endoscopic groups are a class, so given a reductive group G, there's a special class of groups that go by the name of endoscopic. These are not always subgroups of the group G that you start out with. Sometimes they turn out to be, but that's a coincidence, as it were. So to describe what these subgroups are, and I'll usually use letter H for an endoscopic group, I'm going to have to recall the classification of reductive groups. And I'm just going to do the classification for what are called unramified reductive groups. Unramified groups are those that satisfy the first two assumptions that I've made on the group G. The first assumption was that it splits over an unramified extension, and the second assumption was that the group is quasi-split. If those two assumptions hold, then it's said to be an unramified group. So a reductive group, an unramified reductive group, is classified up to isomorphism by what's called root data. Five tuple elements. So let me say what these are. First of all, this is the character group. Of a maximal of a Cartan subgroup. So this will be a free abelian group whose rank is equal to the rank of the group G. Lower star, again, it's a free abelian group of the same rank, but it's the co-character group. So this is dual to the character group. And then C is a finite set of elements inside the group of characters. And this is the set of roots. P check, sitting inside the dual, is a set of co-roots. And if I take just these first four elements, this gives the classification of reductive groups over an algebraically closed field. But in this case, we're looking at unramified groups, so there's one extra ingredient, and that is the group is going to split over an extension that's unramified, and that Galois extension is giving an action of the Galois group of the splitting field on all of this data. And that's the final ingredient F that we need to keep track of to describe what group we have over the field F. So this final ingredient F is going to be an automorphism of finite order F is not so good. Okay, so let's call it sigma. How's that? An automorphism of finite order of the character group, preserving a set of roots. And from the hypothesis that the group is quasi-split, we get that this sigma not only preserves the set of roots, but the set of simple roots for some set of simple roots generating the root system of phi. So I'll just say, and some set simple roots. And you can go both ways with this, given free abelian groups and a root system and a system of coroots and an automorphism of finite order. You can go backwards and construct a reductive group that has this given set of characters as its character group. So let me work a very simple example. Take the group G equals SL2. So I have a split torus given by matrices of the form T inverse. If I look at the characters on this group, the only thing I can do is take T to an integer power, and in this way we get an identification the group of characters with Z. The co-characters are dual. They'll also be Z. The root system of SL2 has one positive root and one negative root. And if I use this identification of the characters with Z, the root are t squared and t minus 2. And so I can think of that as containing this is the coroot, this is the set of roots inside Z. And if you work out dually what the coroots are, that's just plus or minus 1. And then finally, this is a split group, and so there's no the action is trivial of the Galois group in this case, and so we can take the element sigma to be the identity. So the idea of endoscopic groups is that they are defined by taking subsystems of the classifying data. So rather than just taking a subgroup of the group that we start with, we take subsystems of the data and look at the corresponding reductive groups that correspond to them, and those are going to be called endoscopic groups. So let me give careful definition. So an endoscopic group and this again, these will be the unramified endoscopic groups, because everything I talk about in these lectures will be exclusively for unramified groups. So it'll be a group whose data has the form . So I start out with exactly the first two pieces of information being the same for the group H as for G. So I take the group of characters and the group of co-characters for G, and I keep them in place for the group H, for the endoscopic group. When I change the root system and the co-roots, and I change the automorphism sigma H, subject to a few constraints. The constraints are that there exists an element H, a character of the co-character group, and there exists a vial group element inside the vial group associated with the root system of the original group G. And the constraints then are, first of all, that the set of co-roots be precisely the set of co-roots for the group G, I'll put a subscript G here, such that when I, so this is a subset of the set of co-characters, and so I can apply S now to a co-root and ask whether or not I get one here. Okay, so these will be elements such that S applied to alpha is equal to one. And the sigma of H is required to be of the form sigma of G composed with an element in the vial group, and finally sigma H of S should equal S. Okay, now those are the conditions defining the unramified endoscopic groups of H. So this is probably the definition that I'll give in my lectures that takes the longest to get used to, so let me work a couple of examples to make sure we have some sort of intuitive grasp of what sort of groups we might be getting. So let me just use this example of SL2 that I've already started with. So we take SL2, S will be an element character of the co-character group, and this we saw in the case of SL2 is just identified with Z, and if we say what happens to the generator here, what it gets sent to, we can identify this group just with C, so I can think of S as a non-zero complex number in this case. So I'm looking at the action of the Galois group here, the action of the automorphism through the first factor. As we'll see in this example, I mean, these things are in duality. It doesn't really matter whether you how you write the pairing between the two. Okay, so the root system for the endoscopic group, the unramified endoscopic group of SL2, is going to be a set of roots, or co-roots, excuse me, such that S of alpha is equal to 1. And if we uncoil this condition using this identification of S as a complex number and alpha as an integer, you see it really is more natural to write this as S sub n, where n is the integer associated with the particular coroot. So this just becomes, this just unwinds to this if alpha corresponds to this. Now, in our example, the coroots are just plus or minus 1, and so this condition becomes S plus or minus 1 is equal to 1. And so, well, we don't get any roots at all if S is non-trivial. So, and we get all the roots. That is trivial. This is perhaps not too surprising because this root system doesn't have so many subsystems of roots. Sigma of H is forced just to be an element of the Weyl group because in this case, sigma G is the identity. And the Weyl group has two elements. Just the identity and a reflection. So let's look what can happen when W is non-trivial. X on the roots, plus or minus 1. By reflecting the two roots. Now, if you remember the condition that we gave for the action of a sigma on the system required that it preserve a set of simple roots. In this case, simple root is, for instance, just 1. And if W is non-trivial, it will never preserve the set of positive roots or a simple root system. And so what we find is that we can only have a non-trivial element W when we pick this case so that the root system is empty. And so what we find in the end is that there are three possibilities. We can either take the root system to be the full root system that we started with, and in that case, the sigma H has to act trivially, or we can take the empty set for the root system, and in that case, we have two possibilities for the action. We can either take the trivial action or the non-trivial action, and those give the three endoscopic groups, unramified endoscopic groups of SL2. So, in summary, there are three unramified endoscopic groups. And just either we take S equals 1, W trivial. And what do we get in this case? Well, nothing has changed. The root system is the same. The co-root system is the same. The action is the same. So the reductive group that this is classifying is, again, the group we started out with, SL2. Or we can take S non-trivial, again, W trivial. And there we have a reductive group whose character group is Z, and it has no roots. This is just a torus. And since the action is trivial in this case, we find that H is forced to be a one-dimensional split torus. And then finally, S non-trivial and W non-trivial. We find, again, there are no roots, so the group is forced to be a torus. However, the action of the Galois group is non-trivial. There's an element of order 2. So what we find is that it's a torus that splits over an unramified quadratic extension. And I can write this, for instance, as a one-dimensional unitary group. In other words, the norm 1 group, a non-split torus splitting over a quadratic extension. Those are the three endoscopic groups in this case. Let me just give part of a second example. If I take G to be PGL2 instead of GL2, again, this is a group of rank 1, very closely related to SL2, but you actually get a different list of endoscopic groups just by making this small change in the group that you start out with. Let me just give part of that calculation. So here, if you work out the data, again, you can identify characters and co-characters with Z as before, but being the adjoint group, you find that the roots are now identified with plus or minus 1, and the co-roots with plus or minus 2. And again, this is a split group, so there's no difference, there's no action of sigma in this case. Well, what happens in this case? Now, alpha in this calculation, instead of being plus or minus 1, is plus or minus 2. So I get the condition that sigma S squared is equal to the identity. And so we find that S can be plus or minus 1 in this case. So, empty set, Fs is equal to plus or minus 1. Then if we go and look at the condition that sigma H S equals S, in this case, with W non-trivial, so this becomes W S equals sigma H S equals S. And if we take W non-trivial, thank you. So if W is non-trivial here, the action is W S equals S inverse, which equals S, and that implies that S equals plus or minus 1, and because of this condition, that's implying B hat H, B hat G. Here, this is any non-trivial S. Well, yes, that's true. I'll leave it to you to check the last condition, but the last condition, we can take S equal minus 1 in this case, yes. Let's see, so here we get S equals plus or minus 1, we get the full root system, but we saw that a non-trivial W doesn't work with the full root system because you can't preserve the positive roots. And so this implies that W is trivial. So the assumption that it's non-trivial leads to a contradiction in this case. And you don't get the third case when you take the group PGL2 rather than SL2. And you get a list of just two endoscopic groups rather than three. So U1 does not occur. You get the other two just as before. So let me give you an extended exercise here. So let me give a definition first. We'll say that H is an elliptic endoscopic group if I take, say, the character group, let's tensor up with R, and I take the group of, so take the vial group of the new system, and the group generated by that, and this element sigma H. And if I look at the invariance in here under this full action, both by this automorphism and all the automorphisms in the vial group, I get just the zero subspace of this vector space. Thank you. Sorry, I don't want to take all of. I just want to take the z span of the set of roots G. So, for instance, if I look at the endoscopic group H equals GM, in this case, there is no vial group. There is no root system. There is no vial group. This is a trivial action, and this is a non-trivial vector space. And so I do not get zero when I take the invariant vectors in this vector space. So this is not an elliptic endoscopic group. But the other two cases will be. In one case, I have the full vial group acting on the root system, which will be negating the positive roots to the negative roots, and the invariance will be zero. And in the case of this one-dimensional non-split torus, the element sigma that I pick as part of the data is acting by reflection on this one-dimensional vector space as well and producing invariance that will be zero. So these two others. Our elliptic endoscopic groups. Okay, so the example exercise I'd like to give is that of computing things for the unitary group. Give a list, and I'll leave it to you to verify. So, group G is a unitary group. I take a torus. Has elements of the diagonal form. And I have characters given by taking such an element to T1, K1, up to Tn, to the Kn. And I can use this description of the characters to identify the character group here with Zn of n tuples just given by the exponents in the character. The roots, if you calculate those, will just be Ti, if I write it multiplicatively, Ti, Tj inverse, or the inverse of these elements. What about the automorphism? Sigma G takes. Now, in this case, it's split by assumed an unramified quadratic extension. We get a non-trivial action on the data in this case, sending n tuple K1 up through Kn. Do the calculation. Acting in this fashion. S is an element of the co-character, a character of the co-character group. This I can identify then with the free abelian group Zn. And if I look at where each of the basis vectors are sent to in C star, I get an identification of this with the multiplicative group of C, then copied. And then this is the claim that the elliptic endoscopic groups are described by a partition of 1 up through n into two pieces. And what you do is you take minus 1 for I, the ith coordinate of S here under this identification, for I in the first piece, and plus 1 I in the second piece. There are other possibilities for S, and with these other possibilities, you can find an element of the viral group to get an automorphism that is fixed, but only in these cases will you get something that is elliptic. And under this partition, what you find is that H is isomorphic to a product of two unitary groups, where Ni is the number of elements. In the ith part of the partition. And we allow the degenerate case where one of these two sets is the empty set so that you can recover the original group, full unitary group, as one of the elliptic endoscopic groups. Okay, so I'll stop there today. Tomorrow we'll get a statement of the fundamental lemma, and we'll start to see some of the geometry that's involved in understanding this conjecture.